assembled a team that will make you proud. I can promise you this. We're going to have players that will compete. That will compete every day. That will compete to be the best that they can be. They will be great teammates.
Here's your game. Here's Russell Wilson back. Wilson throws. Caught. Hollister's hit on the goal line.
Feels great, baby.
That's a bad mofo.
I'm so happy he's on my team.
Feels great, baby.
Mofo!
Welcome to For the Go Podcast. We are back. Tired of talking about quarterbacks, so we're going to talk about a completely different position. We're looking at day two, day three now. It's been a hectic week. Shout out to rest in peace DMX. I know the two gentlemen joining me tonight have an affinity for one of the greatest rappers of all time, so wanted to get that out there. Fernando, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Tough day today, the X news, man. That was the past couple of days have been rough, man. So all day, I don't care. The kids are in the back seat. It's been X, and it will be X for at least for the next who knows how long. But it's going to be X. But I'm excited. I'm excited to get back on the mic with you, and let's get after it.
Yeah, absolutely. My son was in the car. My dad, Anthony's like, Daddy, why is he barking? One day, son, you'll learn.
I understand.
Yeah, and for everyone out there, who you guys probably recognize that voice, that is my guy, Eric Crocker of Croc Talk TV. Go and check out his Patreon and, of course, the Crocker Report. Last time we were on, Croc, you haven't gotten to this point. You were just Croc, you know, podcast Crocky. Now you over here, you big time Crocky now, man. What's going on? Tell the people what's going on.
Hey, you know, I'll say this. Everything, there is just a process with everything. And I think, like, people are starting to notice my work and, like, the effort, and, like, they just respect my opinion. And the more, like, effort that I put into it, the more I get out of it, you know? And, you know, I've come a long way, but I ain't nowhere near where I feel like I'll be in, like, 2 years. Like, I feel like in 2 years, I'm going to be, like, you know, somewhere where I'm really doing big things. So with me, the good thing is because, you know, I had a crazy path to the NFL and all that. And I think I understand, like, how, you know, everything happens on God's time. And just be patient with the process. But as long as you put in the work, you know, you'll get a lot out of it. And so far, you know, just doing the podcast with Giants.com, doing the podcast with Matt Miller and the Chargers, you know, and you know, on their official website, like, you know, those things to me, like, that's like, all right, E, like, you're heading in the right direction. So that's been real cool.
Next thing you know, we're going to see you on ESPN. I'm like, see, I knew him back in podcast Crocky days. You know? And I can always be like, I just hit him on the phone. Hey, man, I need you to come on the podcast. You know, we need some clout boost. No, I appreciate it. As always, though, Croc, I appreciate your time. Respect. I always respect your opinion. You know, I reach out to you like, yo, am I seeing this right? You know, you give me feedback. So let's get into it. The 49ers are picking third. I think everyone on this podcast agrees number three pick should be Justin Fields. We can kind of leave that alone. It better be Justin Fields. That's how it should go. But at pick 43, there's a couple corners that I think would probably fit the 49ers at 43. Let's start with the guy you put me on to first, Eric Stokes. His pro day, they said he ran a 4.25. He had a 38.5-inch vertical, 6 foot, 194 pounds. Talk to the folks about Eric Stokes, because what I see is a solid man, someone who can play zone. He is, you know, he's at that 6 foot height where he can probably slide into the slot, you know, cover your slot receivers, does fairly well with the outside guys, does well with speed guys. I haven't really seen him go up against the bigger guys. What are you thinking, Croc?
You know, so first I want to say, like, once you start kind of getting into the second round, a lot of times these guys are missing, like, something, right? Like, or maybe they don't have, like, elite traits. Well, clearly he has elite traits, so he doesn't have that issue. He has the size. He has the traits, right? The one thing that I noted, which for me, like, just how I watch film, I don't look at height, weight. I try not to look at speed or anything like that as I go in to watch the film. Like, I want the film to write the notes for me, if that makes sense. So that's how I view things. So, you know, you'll see a lot of people that have issues with Devontae Smith, but when I write notes, his weight is never an issue in any of my notes. So same thing with Eric Stokes, like, you know, his size, all that. Yeah, I want to go off of more. I want to go more off of like just how they play, and watching him, knowing that he is someone that Blaze. I know he was the state 100 meter champion. I knew he was the 200 state, you know, champion out in Georgia. I didn't feel like he played with that same type of explosiveness. And when you are a speedster and you possess that type of speed, right? Kind of reminds me of like Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs was a speedster, right? He's a speedster.
Yeah.
That's his main, that's his best trait, right? Being a speedster. But I felt like with Ruggs, he didn't always utilize his speed throughout routes. So he was very inconsistent with being able to win with just pure routes. Now, when the ball's in the air, or if he catches a crosser and he's, you know, run, like, yeah, he's great there, but like in route, he doesn't affect the corner on every route with his speed. And when I watch Stokes, it's kind of something similar, where it's like you're as fast or faster than anyone that you're guarding, but you don't challenge yourself to, you know, test yourself, your speed, right? So what I mean by that is a lot of times he'll be in position, or one of them be in position, but like if, say, Jaylen Waddle, who I know is a speedster. I know Waddle is a speedster. But instead of playing Waddle what I call dick to hip, and it really is essentially like what it sounds like, dick to hip. Instead of playing Waddle dick to hip, he's playing upfield shoulder and not anticipating a stop. So once Waddle does stop on like a 10, 12-yard stop route, Stokes goes upfield 4 or 5 more yards. That's telling me you're not trusting your ability to run with him when Waddle is committing to a go route. Like you're not trusting yourself that you can do that. What you're saying is, oh, I need to get over top of this guy. So you stop. I mean, so you continue going when this guy stops. Like you have to be able to test yourself, especially in open field. Like, and when you possess that type of speed. Now, if you don't got that type of speed, then that's a totally different story, right? Yeah. If Eric Crocker is guarding Jaylen Waddle, hell yeah, I'm upfield shoulder. I'm a 4.55 guy. You know what I'm saying? But Eric Stokes, you run in the 4.2s. Trust your speed. There was another time where in 2019, he was getting beat by this receiver from Tennessee. It wasn't Juwan Jennings. It was another guy that had. He was number one. And he's actually a guy. I mean, we're talking about a guy that a big, not as fast, undrafted guy. He ended up going undrafted to the damn Saints. But this guy, like, was beating them off the line, stacking them vertically. Beat him across his face on shallow crossers, like, and then bullying him after plays, like all these little things I'm noticing. And I'm just like, I don't understand. I know this guy is blazing fast and explosive, but he doesn't play with that same type of explosiveness. So in my notes, I put, does not play with the explosiveness that he possesses. And to me, that's a big thing, because why am I going to draft you if you run a 4.25 if you're not playing at that speed? You know what I'm saying? So I would like to see that more. But on a positive note, I'll say his technique is pretty consistently good for the most part. I really like that. I do feel like he has the ability to match up with different style of receivers when he's on. I think that he can anticipate a little bit more from like more of a bail position or like a shuffle position. I feel like he can anticipate more. But overall, I saw a solid receiver. But I think I like his teammate, Tyson Campbell, a little more.
I like Tyson Campbell a lot, a lot. But I love what you said. The word you used with Eric Stokes was, you know, the consistency. And it's odd because as I was watching film and reading some, you know, different, you know, reviews in terms of his play, it almost seemed like it was a negative thing after a while. Like, kind of, you know, real consistent guy. Just, you know, not maybe trusting what he sees out there on the field all the time or trusting those instincts, playing it safe a little bit, but a consistent type of corner. And when you look at him and between his build and his speed, you would think you'd see a little bit more of a flashy, instinctual corner who's relying on some athleticism. But he seems like a really smart, smart corner who, you know, his consistency, you know, is big time in the SEC. It's just, you know, maybe people want to see a little bit more flash and the interceptions and things of that nature to kind of really boost him up there from a pick standpoint. But I like everything you said about him. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's there. Like, he has the traits. Now, if you're just looking for a trait guy, like, Akella Witherspoon, right, where he was someone where there was like, okay, there needs to be some developing, but the traits are there, right? You know, Akella 6'3", 200 pounds, ran a 4.45 at the combine, which is really fast. Like, you knew the traits were there, but it's like, okay, we got to get to come all together. And it almost was like throughout his time with the 49ers, the reason why we saw so much inconsistent play was because it's like, are you 100% bought into what you are capable of doing? And the 49ers kind of fought with that with Akello, to where it's like, oh, damn, looks like a top five corner in the league. Then it's like, God damn, like, he's benched. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like, you saw, uh-oh, am I cutting out? Am I good?
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, you saw the inconsistent play. And then it's like, so with Eric Stokes, is that the same? Like, what Stokes am I going to get from week to week? I feel like he can be really good. I feel like he has all the traits. I think he possesses everything that I ideally would want to see. A little bit of tightness. But again, like you said, with that consistency, there was just something missing to where it's like, maybe he's not taking enough chances. Maybe he's not trusting what he sees more, to where he's not just being safe and giving up certain plays that he should never give up because of the talent that he does possess, the traits he possesses.
Yeah. With Stokes, what I did like on the film, I don't know if you'll agree here, but I like how he would shoot his hands. Like, when the ball's in the air, he's shooting his hands in there, like, late. So that way they're kind of not expecting it. It'll get it in between the arm and kind of knock the ball. He had a lot of pass breakups, and a lot of the scouting reports said he's coachable, very intelligent. And then you mentioned he was a former track star. So that was a big thing for me. So when I'm watching him, you know, it's not always about the interceptions. You know, the pass breakups count too. And he had a lot of those. And I really liked how he worked his hands. And something you taught me, Croc, was like, hey, how do these guys win? And I thought he wins a lot with his hands at the line of scrimmage, getting his hands on a guy first and then backing off a little bit there. But like he brought up, where he kind of doesn't, he's not trusting what he sees the entire time. So, you know, how is he winning? I think with his hand, I think he has really good hands at the point of attack. Of course, when the ball's in the air, he does fairly well there.
I think even more so, and this is the last thing I'll say about it, but even more so than trusting what you see, it's trusting what you feel. Like, being a cornerback, a lot of it's about feel. And you can feel certain routes, you know, you can feel like what the guy is doing, and you have to trust that. And that all kind of sums up instincts, right? Trust what you're feeling. And once he does that, it's like, okay, you got all the ability in the world and you can be great, but he got to trust what he feels a little more, I think.
Yeah. And just to touch on him, one last piece here, with all the film that you've seen, from the little bit that I've seen, tell me a little bit about how you feel he is as a tackler. He's, from film that I've seen, he looked like a short tackler. I saw some really nice corner blitzes that Georgia drew up, and he gets back there and he puts his arms around him and really lays into, whether it be another wide receiver or a quarterback. But he seemed just like all around, I mean, from a tackling to, you know, instincts and whatnot. I mean, he seems like a really all around corner.
Yeah, I think he was solid. I don't prioritize tackling as much as other people. Like, if you are a really good tackler, like, you know, I'll make note of it and be like, okay, you know, he's a plus tackler, like, that's great, but it's not gonna make me like a corner any more or less. Now, the one thing I do want to see is, like, you know, you can't be out there getting punked or pushed around or bullied by receivers. But as far as just like being a tackler, like, most of these guys can tackle. You know, do you kind of run away from it? Like, you know, I don't know. That just kind of tells me more so about what your mindset is. But a lot of people got on CJ Henderson about his tackling. And my thing was, well, he attempts it. He just misses sometimes. You know, you see some good tackles, you see him miss. But my thing is, like, are you running away from it? And if you are, that's more so when I have the issue. Like, are you staying blocked? And I actually saw a play like that in with CJ Henderson against Miami, where I'm like, okay, I don't like that. I don't like that. But for the most part, yeah, I didn't take note of anything like that from Eric Stokes.
Good.
Word. So let's talk about the other Georgia corner. I think everyone here agrees it's probably the guy that we would all want in a San Francisco 49er uniform. Mm-hmm. Tyson Campbell, 4.37, 6.83, had a 34.5-inch vertical, and then the broad jump was 10.4. I see a very physical corner, very instinctual corner. What do you think, Croc, here? What is he, more of a man guy, more of a zone guy? Because I don't have the eye for corners like you do. So where do you think he fits? Like, when I'm watching, like, I know okay, I can understand offensive stuff. Defenses get confusing when you're watching tape. Like, you don't know what the call is, what who has this responsibility, who has that responsibility. I can tell the difference between man and zone, but some zone coverages are just really different. What do you think of Tyson Campbell as far as zone guy?
So what I would suggest to you, and this is kind of like how I watch the film, I don't necessarily watch film to see like what the play call is or anything. Like, it to me, it's all about like who the player is. So like certain things like zone or whatever, like you can coach up zone, you know, like man skills are definitely much more important to me. And that's what I'm looking for. That's why some conferences are a little tough. SEC is the easiest. That's the easiest conference to evaluate the corners because they play so much man, press. Yeah. And you get to really see it on full display a lot. Whereas some of these other, like I'm watching Washington Huskies, and they like do so much spot dropping where guys just drop off in space. And it's like, what? It's not telling me nothing. You got to really look and find and watch a ton of film. But when it comes to Tyson Campbell, like what I noticed from him was, like Stokes, the first thing that kind of jumped out to me was just their consistency with their technique at the line of scrimmage. I thought Tyson Campbell, he possessed that as well. Now, Campbell is another Blazer. I want to say he was the state champ in the 100 and 200 in Florida. So he was a 10, 300-meter guy in high school. He's another guy that was a Blazer. As far as identifying him, the first things that I look for is, like, movement skills. And I'm like, okay. Again, I don't look at height, weight, or anything like that before I watch it, but I'm looking, I'm like, he looks like 6'2", 205-pound guy, kind of moves like that. Like, I think I'm seeing a little bit of slow-footed a little bit. And I was really shocked to see he was 6'1", 190 pounds. Like, I was shocked to see that when he measured in at the pro day. Because on film, I feel like the way he moved was that of somebody a little bit bigger. So I don't think he has, like, high-end movement skills. But I do still think that he possesses high-end traits. And what I mean by that is, like, he does have good, like, nice turn and run. You know, he can run with any type of receiver. You watch him against Bama. Now, you saw – I think you got to see a little bit of everything there and what he kind of is and what he isn't. He got beat on, like, what, a 90-yard touchdown or whatever by Waddle.
Who didn't?
Yeah, by Waddle. And you could just see, like, you know, him playing off and then having to kind of turn and run and match the speed of somebody like that in space, where now it's like, damn, like I got to either turn and run with him or he can stop and I'm kind of in between and then damn, he just fell, you know? But aside from that, I thought like he gave up some catches to Devontae Smith, who I think the world of. I think he's the best receiver in college football. But he made Devontae Smith work. Now, for anybody that wants to say that Devontae Smith too small, watch that game where you have Tyson Campbell playing really tight coverage on him, really sticky, and Devontae Smith working through contact, working back to the ball. The thing I like to see, though, is the corner challenging the receiver? You know, is he making the receiver have to work? You guys remember week one last year where DeAndre Hopkins caught 14 passes on the 49ers, and it was just pitch and catch, pitch and catch, pitch and catch. And there was no challenging them, right? There was no challenging them. It's just 10-yard catch. 10-yard, 12-yard catch, 12-yard catch. He's just catching it and walking out of bounds. And I'm like, dude, what is this? I can respect it a lot more if you are making the receiver work back 5 yards to the ball, have to fight through contact. And if he makes a great play, then he just made a great play. But at least make the guy work. And I thought that showed up consistently, not just in that film, in other films. Even when Tyson Campbell gave up plays, watch him against Florida. Thought he played very well, but he gave up 2 touchdowns. 1 to Kyle Pitts, another 1 to Grimes. Both of them the same way. Great technique, good hands on at the line of scrimmage, got his hand around, technique was perfect, flawless, ball was in a great spot. He challenged at the catch point, 6'6 tight end, that's a freak of nature, caught the ball. 6'4 receiver, that's a freak of nature, caught the ball at the high point. So it's like those things are kind of tough, but again, I want to see, are you competing? Are you challenging the receivers? And I thought every film that I put on, he definitely did that. And when you can guard a guy like Devontae Smith in space, that tells me a lot about like, you know, you got some good instincts or movement skills or whatnot right there. So there's a lot to like about Tyson Campbell. I have to finish my breakdown on him, but I definitely like him a lot.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Tyson Campbell, and the fact that I mean, you brought up Alabama, right? And all, you know, the yards that he gave up against Alabama. And I think it was PFF that mentioned, you know, almost half of the yards that he gave up in 2020 came against Alabama. And, you know, like you said, you challenge, and if they make a great play and it's a great throw in that perfect spot, I guess you just kind of have to tip your hat and move on and just, you know, keep the grind going. But
you know what? That's a tough thing that you said that, like you said, it's against Florida. You say it's against Alabama. And sometimes in other conferences, like, corners aren't getting challenged in that way. Right. Like last year we had Jeffrey Okuda coming out, and it's like all year, it's like, well, he never gave up a catch 40 yards or whatever. And look at CJ Henderson. And it's like, well, who is he going against? Like, exactly. Cephas? If you ask him who the best receiver he faced, he was like Cephas. He ran a 4.7 something. Like, bro, that's not SEC. Like, that's not what these SEC, like, the Alabama guys.
There's no Big Ten slander on this podcast, Croc. So let's be nice.
No Big Ten slander. But I'm saying, like, you know, we got to throw some context in there.
Yeah, yeah.
In the sense of how these guys are being challenged. And, hey, like, okay, he got dog, but, like, we're talking about one of the greatest tight end prospects ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about some dudes that are playing like at an extremely high level and will go to any other conference and just dominate. So, you know, I definitely put the SEC corners on the pedestal a little bit because I feel like between the schemes that they run, which is more man coverage, they're challenged a lot more than most of these other conferences. They are challenged, but whether it's the scheme or the guys that they have to guard.
Absolutely. No, yeah. I don't have an SEC bias, but I absolutely agree. I mean, Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, shoot, there's, you know, Terrence Marshall, Jamar Chase, you know, Justin Jefferson last year. Yeah, the list is long as hell. Let's get out of the SEC. Let's head over to the Pac-12. Keith Taylor. I got to see him in person at the Senior Bowl. Had a really good Senior Bowl. Very, very consistent throughout the practices, flashed quite a bit against some of the better competition. Him and Powell had some really nice matchups, but he ran a 4.49, 10.7 on the broad jump, 33.5-inch vertical. Keith seems like a zone guy, and that's, you brought it up. Pac-12 plays a ton of zone. UW does a lot of that stuff. Where are we at with Keith? And from my understanding, the Niners have spent a lot of time with some of these Washington prospects. Talking to myself, he said he's spoken a lot to the 49ers, so he is on their radar. How would he fit for the 49ers, and what would he provide for the 49ers?
Yeah, so Keith Taylor, he's a player that I like. You know, just watching him and kind of trying to figure out, like, who he is, right? Like, what type of fee? Again, at first it was a little tough because, unlike the SEC, like, the Pac-12, their corners don't always just challenge themselves playing press man a whole lot, right? So there was a whole lot of spot dropping. They even ran this one weird coverage where they have like a safety in front of them, and then the corners are like behind them. And I'm just like, it's some kind of cloud, or I don't know what it is. But you know, you kind of filter through that and you continue to watch. And the one thing I just noticed, especially in 2019 when he was wearing number 27, there was a lot of good stuff. One, I really like the versatility. For a guy that was, you know, as long as him, pause, you know, and to be able to play outside, to be able to play inside, you know, they challenge him from that perspective, ask him to cover tight ends, slot receivers. I thought the way they utilize him put a whole lot on display. And I never saw him look like he was overmatched. You know what I'm saying? Like, it never looked like he was overwhelmed by anybody that he had to guard. Now, maybe Pac-12 receivers, I don't know if they have any guys. They do got a good one out of Stanford that I feel like people should be talking a lot more about.
Was it Simo? Fehehe
or whatever. Fiohi or – but anyways, Fiocchi. Or, but anyways, a lot of times, though, you know, he never looked like he was overwhelmed with anything that he was getting or facing from – the Pac-12 receivers. So from that standpoint, I think it's really good. Now, he is a taller guy, and his movements, while they are long, he really reminded me a lot of Akella Witherspoon, where
I thought too.
He is a longer corner, but I thought that his movement skills were good. Like, I didn't see, like, it take a whole lot to get his feet around or change directions or, you know, bad hips or, you know, stiff. I thought for, you know, somebody that has his size, I thought he did a good job with his movement skills. Now, in 2020, when he switched to number 8, which is an ugly number. But he switched to number 8. I wore it my junior year. I didn't like it. I was like, get me out of this number. But I thought he did well. I thought he did well. He gave up. I was watching him against Stanford. He gave up a couple catches down the field. But for the most part, no matter who I was watching, he was contesting passes and he looked like he belonged. So I think I see him more as a third round guy.
Yeah.
You know, especially with his 40 time, which is, you know, I think I saw multiple times, like a couple of times of like 4.49, 4.5, like low 4.5s.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, man, everybody's numbers are inflated. Like, why are you still hovering around 4.5? So, you know, from that perspective, it's like, okay, are you really a 4.6 guy? Like, I don't know. Like, yes, I don't know. So it scares me a little bit. And but I like his ability. I like his feet. I like the change of direction. I like all that. I think I would take him more third round. And coincidentally, that's where Keller Witherspoon went. And that's kind of who he somewhat reminds me of. Witherspoon still ran a 4.45 at the combine. So he clearly was faster, but
just kind of
the way they play.
It's going to piss me off.
The way they play, kind of mirror each other somewhat.
Yeah.
Maybe more. He's, matter of fact, he's more naturally aggressive though. He has more natural aggressiveness.
Keith or Akello?
Keith.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's 43% completion and 2 touchdowns in his career at UW as a 2-year starter. So, hey, he's doing his thing. I don't know. I think I'm kind of skeptical about UW players after the Dante Pettis thing and guys who wear number 8. Dante Pettis wore 8. Keith Taylor wore 8. I don't know.
Buda Baker.
You brought up that number 8 thing. It's like, man, what the hell?
I know.
But yeah, well, Buda, and it's, you know what's crazy though? Remember that draft class had Sidney Jones, Buda Baker, and Kevin King, right? So that's the UW squad. And then the Colorado one had Tedrick Thompson, Akello, and Awuzier. And I feel like only one, each, I think the safeties out of all six of those, the 2 safeties were the best ones to come out of the schools. It's just crazy how that works. Because those secondaries were solid when they played in college that year. Like as a unit.
Again, though, like what did they play in the SEC? And if they did, what did they do against those guys? Because again, that's a different type of challenge.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like when it's like, damn, you know, I got to play Alabama and they have Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Smith. You know, like now
all they got to face is St. Brown at USC, and that's their best. You know, that's probably the best
Michael
wide receiver.
Pittman.
All right. Pittman's nice. Fern, do you have anything on Keith Taylor? Anything you liked?
So, I mean, obviously, just the that height and like you guys mentioned before. I mean, obviously, I mean he's just a solid all around corner as well. And with his size, I mean, that's kind of in today's NFL. I mean, you're getting a 6'3 corner, you know, hey, I'm okay with working with him a little bit to understand routes a little bit, making sure that he's putting himself in the best position. But he seems just like he's okay with physicality. If you want to put him at the line.
Yeah.
And he's okay with that, which I like, especially from a Pac-12 corner, and just really anyone in a Pac-12 wide receiver corner. If you're okay being physical, I like that a lot. One of the things I just couldn't wrap my head around was it 4 seasons or whatever it might have been, 0 interceptions for him, like not 1 interception for this kid. And then I also think about, and this is a question for you, as you start to look at tape and you know over the years that he might be playing for, and this is anybody for a specific program, and then you see them go to maybe Mobile, right, and Senior Bowl and kind of ball out, you know, how much weight does Mobile affect maybe 2 or 3 years of film, you know, because you see a lot of guys really ramp up their stock maybe in a Senior Bowl by going against really good competition for an extended period of time and seeing them really play well, practice hard. How much do you think that really, really affects maybe someone like Keith Taylor who, you know, maybe film over at Washington, but now you get him in Alabama, Mobile, and put him up against some really, really good players. You know, how much does that weigh?
I think you definitely have to put some weight in it, right? Because now you're getting them out of their comfort zone, out of their element, out of a scheme that maybe could hide them a little bit. And now you're here with all the cameras on you and there is no hiding. How are you going to compete? I think from that standpoint, that's when you start to really find out about who somebody is. You know, you're going to be in a position where you are a little bit more vulnerable. How are you going to react to that? And we've seen a lot of guys stand up and ball out, and those guys get shots in the NFL, and typically they're good, you know? And if a guy starts, goes there and gets dogged, it might be kind of ugly, you know? I feel like a lot of what the Senior Bowl is like, what you see is what you get. Now, obviously, learning a new scheme and stuff like that, you'll learn how fast somebody can pick something up, because, you know, if they can't pick something up, then they're going to play slower. If they play slower, then they're not going to be themselves. And obviously, like, that's not. So there has to be some context, but I do feel like ultimately you get to learn a whole lot about a player when you know, see him at the Senior Bowl.
Nice. Yeah.
Javi learned a lot about Mac Jones from over there, so.
I learned that he's a third-round selection.
Third overall.
Third overall.
God. Yeah, we wasn't gonna go there. It pisses me off. Like, listen, what'd you say on your pod? Y'all better stop fucking sleeping on Justin Fields. I feel the same way. Like, leave that. Like, come on now. Anyways, let's get to the final corner of the group that, you know, yeah, would fit for this, for the 49ers. Been St. Juice guy. So we hit SEC, hit Pac-12, and now we're back to Big Ten, best conference in college football. I will have nothing other than that. but Ben St. Juice, I think the biggest thing that stood out to me with his pro day was his short shuttle, 3.96, and he stumbled when he did it. But he did run a 4.5, and then he had a 6.63 three cone drill. So he's got really good hips. He when he was on our show, he mentioned that, you know, he was looking to, you know, get a little bit more fluid, be a little more loose, and his pro day kind of showed that. I thought he did fairly well at Minnesota. The year that Penn State had all those guys, KJ Hamler being one of the guys that he guarded regularly in that Minnesota Penn State game in 2019. I thought he pretty much locked him up. Yeah. He does fairly well with those smaller guys because he is so shifty. What do you think of Ben? What do you think of him as a fit? This is kind of funny because he brought it up on our show that apparently his girlfriend knows John Lynch and they're close. They go to church together or something. And you know how John Lynch is with knowing people in the draft, he'll just take them. You know, I took a class with Solomon Thomas, you know, Reuben Foster and him hung out somewhere one time, and he'll take a guy. Ben St. Juice, what do you think, Croc?
I like him. He's another one of those guys, you know, a longer corner. Which has kind of been the theme of the guys that you've picked out to fit.
I was just going to say that. Longer corners.
Yeah. No.
Pause.
A longer corner. But I think he has good feet. Pause. He has good feet. I think he has good change of direction. I'd say he's a tick above everything I saw from Taylor. So they have very similar skill sets. But to me, it looked like he was just a tick above that, with just movement, skills, feet, the way I felt like he challenged his, and I don't want to say he challenged himself more, but I think his scheme challenged him a little bit more in space to really be able to diagnose a lot of his movement skills at Minnesota. They played a lot of off coverage where he was really forced to, you know, get in and out of his breaks, really be able to anticipate, really, you know, come down and drive on, you know, in breaking routes. I thought from, you know, press coverage, it looked good. Matter of fact, so his first two plays against Maryland, the very first play, it was a run play or a screen, and he just went to the receiver, boom, threw him out the way, bow, stuffed the receiver. I said, okay, I like where we're going here. And then the very next play, he was in press coverage, and his feet were a little off. And I was like, oh, is he going to be one of those taller guys? But I thought he recovered well in the sense of, like, the rest of the game, his feet were never an issue. Definitely changed my tune on that. I thought he did a good job of challenging stuff, getting in and out of his breaks. Now, he did give up a touchdown against Maryland on a slant route, but even then, I thought he contested it very well. And again, that's what I want to see, right? Okay, you gave up a touchdown, but are you just getting whooped and you have no chance? Or does somebody have to make a great play and then, you know, they end up scoring that way? And I thought the guy just made a great play and he ended up scoring. Oh, but ultimately, I saw a lot of good things that I wanted to see. There was one play where, you know, I really, like, you know, if you guys ever watch film with me, you'd see I like look for the like smallest of details that kind of tell me who this player is. Mm-hmm. But the quarterback, so he was kind of running this way on a post route, and the quarterback was rolling out to his left and threw the ball away out of bounds. And as he was running this way and the quarterback threw the ball that way, he flipped his hips right there and started kind of running towards the ball, but then obviously it went out of bounds. But I saw that in the on the end from the end zone view behind, and I was able to boom see it. And I said, oh, that was a nice fluid movement. There were no wasted steps. You could tell that he's not fighting against any of his own movements, right? And what I mean by that is there are a lot of guys that you see them. I see it with Keith Taylor a lot.
Yeah.
Where when he's like flipping his hips, it like takes him, like as I got open, I take a step, then I open again, right? So it's like he has to take another step to be able to open it and then go in the direction that he's trying to go into. Where St. Juice just flipped the hips right there. There was no wasted steps. There wasn't that step in between to try to gather yourself and gain balance. It was just a nice little fluid. Boop. And I was like, okay, he got some nice stuff. So that was one thing I really pointed out. Like, hey, this guy's movement skills are a plus, especially for his size, the way he's able to move and flip his hips and stuff. And then he goes to his pro day and he runs has a terrific three cone and short shuttle or whatnot. And I'm like, well, that matches with what I saw on film. That's why I trust my eyes, man. Forget those analytical people.
Yeah. Gotta trust your eyes.
So tell me. So we've gone over a good amount of corners here that are relatively taller corners, right? 6'2", 6'3". And I, at me being a 5'9" human being, I'm like, where's the love? Well, how come every single 5'10" corner I read on, I gotta hear, and I know, and I'm asking you this because you said that you're not too overly concerned with height as you start watching film and you're starting to look at people. But how come every single time I read something about a 5'10" corner, I hear, you know, yeah, he has the potential to overcome his height, and I'm always like, damn, he's got to overcome his height. This guy's out here moving like a beast on the field, and I mean, I'm just like, one of them in particular was Asante, right, in this draft, and I'm like, I think this dude's a beast, and it's always coming back to height and coming back to height. And I know that's today's NFL is the 6'1" and above corner. But what do you think to give some love to the 5'10" corners when they say overcoming height? What exactly do they mean by overcoming height? If they're, you know, doing things better than maybe currently a 6'3" prospect, but hey, you know, that 6'3" prospects, maybe a ceiling's higher. What are some of the things that they might be talking about for anyone, you know, at home that might be listening when they talk about overcoming just that height? 5'10", you know, it's not too bad. It's not too short. They're moving and jumping.
So those are people that don't know. I don't want to say they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. You can say that. Go ahead.
Those are people that think that, you know, it's like a video game, you know, right? Like from my standpoint, how I view it. And I was a 6'1", close to 6'2" corner. Mm-hmm. All right. Close to 200 pounds. So I was the guy with the size and all that. I envied the 5'10", 5'11 guys, you know, the way that they could move, the fluidness that they had with their feet, with their hips, with their change of directions. It was just different. You were able to match the movement skills of a smaller guy, but also be in position against bigger guys, you know? So to me, I don't care at all how tall you are. Now, obviously, you know, you start getting under 5'10", then, you know, you're at somewhat of a disadvantage. But even then, I still care more about how you play. And that's why I always say I let the film take my notes for me. I don't want to know how tall somebody is because I just want to know how they play. And let the film tell me that he's too short, or let the film tell me that he's not playing tall enough. Because I know I had Denzel Ward as my CB1. And Jair Alexander as my CB2 in the, what was that, 2017, 2018 class?
I think so, yeah, 18.
18? It was 18, I think.
Yeah, that's the Baker Mayfield
anyway, they were
class.
My CB1 and 2. And you know, Ward has dealt with some injuries. You know what people will do? They'll say, well, it's because he's small. No, because these bigger guys got injuries too. You know what I'm saying? But they'll say it's because he's small. But Jair Alexander is a top 5 corner in his league. And I'll put him on any type of receiver. So to me, it doesn't matter. What I care about most is, can you cover first and foremost? And then I start to go through, like, you know, the different traits and stuff and the consistency and all that. So, yeah, there are a lot of people that I think it's a lot of people that didn't play. Mm-hmm. And they start to put more emphasis. And I don't even want to say people that didn't play, because the Pete Carrolls and stuff that started this trend of 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", corners. But my thing has always been, just can you cover? Because if you look around the league, there's guys of all shapes and sizes that cover very well. Jason Verrett was the top 5 corner at one point. And, you know, he obviously covered extremely well last year. Like, he's 5'10". Jair Alexander, terrific cover guy, right? There's Casey Hayward. At one point, he was like the highest graded corner on PFF 1 year. I think it was maybe like the 2017 or 2018 season when he first got to the Chargers. So my thing is, like, who cares? Like, can the guy cover? I think definitely people put too much emphasis on a guy being smaller. And then the first thing they want to do is, oh, let's put him in a nickel. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, let the film tell me that I got to put this dude in a nickel. So reasons why I would put somebody in a nickel if they're not, like, you know, tall or whatever, is if they don't have the vertical speed, you know? So you see somebody like Asante Samuel. Everything on this film says he can play outside or inside. That's what his film told me. Now, you see him test. I don't think he tested all that great, right? I think that was kind of a
yeah, it was a knock on his test. Was pretty bad, yeah.
It wasn't great, right? And if you're only 5'10", and I don't know how tall he is, but if you're only like 5'10", and you don't test great, then that could kind of – because now you're – you know, if you have to really fight to keep up with a receiver that's much bigger than you,
yeah,
then that's where you can really be at a disadvantage. I need you to be comfortable. I need you to feel like, hey, I'm running with this dude effortlessly. And when he goes up, I go up, and I challenge the ball at the highest point as well. I think he did a lot of that in college, but the testing would worry me just a little bit.
So wait, people were complaining about his pro day, Asante Samuel. He measured in a 5'10 and 1/8, 180 pounds, 4'4". He was a 4.45 guy.
Okay, maybe I thought I saw 4.50. Maybe that's why I thought.
Yeah.
So 4.45, that's good then. So I mean, and that's what I initially said. That's why I said I like the film to talk for me.
Sure.
Or take my notes for me. I said the film says he can play outside or inside. I saw him get challenged at the catch point several times against different receivers. He gave up a ball down the sideline, first play of the game, Clemson 2019. All right, he challenged it. He didn't get it. Maybe it's because he's shorter. I don't know. But then I saw several other games where he was breaking up passes in the end zone on jump balls and had no issue. So, you know, hey, I talked about him giving up a catch on jump ball against Clemson. Well, I saw Tyson Campbell, that 6'2", give up multiple jump balls. So,
yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I wanted to give some love to my shorter corner, since everyone here was in that like 6'2", 6'1". Besides, we got our Georgia Bulldogs that are in that like 6 foot, 6'1" range. But, you know, Benjamin, just even go my last point on Benjamin, with his height at 6'3", you know, looking at him having an outstanding mobile, an outstanding Senior Bowl. I mean, I really, as a developmental type of corner at his size, like, again, I still think it's going to take some work before you just throw him right out there to the Wolves. But I really like him in terms of, if I had to choose between one, Benjamin or Keith, I'd go Benjamin pretty quickly, and it wouldn't be a whole lot thought between the two.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Not only, and everything I've read and everything I've heard, you know, they're thinking he might be a fourth or fifth round guy. Like, you know, the Niners got 3 5th round picks. He could be that first fifth rounder off the board for the Niners. And, you know, they're going to need corners. We all know that, you know, all these other guys are 1 year deals. Verrett and
I'm the Niners. I'm for sure. I'm trying to take multiple corners.
Yeah,
like it's a position that greatly needs to be revamped. And I feel like you need to throw like a good amount of resources. So ideally, and I say ideally because there's a lot of people that are like, corner needs to be the second round pick. And they're like, well, why can't, well, what if like a receiver is higher on my board at that point?
What if a
lineman is higher on my board? What if an edge rusher is higher on my board? Like, I'm not going to force this position. There has to be a value standpoint, right, with it. So I get it that we want to prioritize corner, but if the value of another player is higher on my board, I'm taking him second round, regardless of corner being a need. So, you know, obviously, you know, ideally, I would want to go into the draft saying, hey, I want three corners. Mm-hmm. But if the way it plays out, I'm only able to grab one, then all right, I just grab one and maybe I try to go and sign a guy like AJ Bouye or something.
Yeah, Bouye got signed though, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, then.
Yeah.
Sherman.
Yeah, Sherman is out there.
Yeah. Isaiah, somebody else.
Okay.
I like Sherman. I like Sherman.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I just know that I remember watching them against Buffalo and it was like, damn, we can't run man. No, and they started moving him to like the middle of the field. They moved him like to the middle so that they can play like man with like Witherspoon, I think, came in and somebody else. And that's what they started doing with Sherman, where he was kind of like spy type of thing he was doing. So nothing against Sherm. I think he's great. He was great for the 49ers. I just think like
it's coming to mind
as like a pure man corner. I think I have to scheme around that aspect of his game. So I wouldn't rush to go sign him.
Yeah. Well, before we get you out of here, Croc, you know, the Niners got pick 43, and I think that's kind of what we try to focus on. And you brought it up when you kind of brought it up here. The Niners were in pick 43, you know, positional value at 43. If there is your top edge rusher, top wide receiver, or top corner, what are you doing at 43?
Oh, my top. See, it just depends.
So like if your board is pretty even, okay, here we go. You got edge, corner, wide receiver.
So it depends on who's there, right? But say if somebody slips a little bit like Greg Newsom, I'm taking him for sure. But like, say if there's Greg Newsom, or I don't want to say Greg Newsom, say Greg Newsom is gone, but there's like Tyson Campbell, Eric Stokes, and Dyami Brown from UNC.
Yeah.
I'm taking Dyami Brown, the receiver.
Okay.
Receiver is, and I'm pretty sure you'll have a show about it, but
yeah,
that's an underrated big need for the 49ers.
Correct. Yeah,
you have Ayuk, and then you have Debo, who's like a tweener, and nothing really after that. I think that it's a huge need, and you can't gamble or you can't like. We'll see. Are they having OTAs? I don't know anything about that stuff.
Everything from what I read today was a lot of virtual stuff. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. So if they're not,
I just don't want to get vaccines and shit. So who knows what the deal is.
Yeah. If they can't really be, so then you don't get a chance to see Jalen Hurd. You don't get a chance to see Juwan Jennings and where they're at. Cause I remember when I was playing, we reported for camp. We reported for OTAs April like 14th. Mm-hmm. So we started going through our phases. We were on the field. Like you get to kind of see guys and then you get to, and then you address the draft. Well, right now, if they might not be able to address it, they might not be able to see guys before they address the draft. And if I can't trust that Jalen Hurd is healthy and 100%, I'm going to be able to count on him, then I need to make receiver a priority because one, we haven't really used Debo like a pure receiver. So really I only have like 1.5 receivers, you know what I'm saying?
And George.
And then George, you know? So I really feel like that third spot, people want to downplay Kendrick Bourne's importance, but it's, you know, that's a void that they're going to have to miss. So if Dyami Brown and is between like Campbell and Stokes and them, a lot of people will want to probably force Stokes, but I'm going with a guy like Dyami Brown, who I think should be a first round pick. If it's guys like Rondale Moore, if I have to choose between Rondale Moore and Tyson Campbell, I might go Campbell. I know that's not the sexy thing to do, but I think I might go Campbell.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, and I think I would go edge rusher and then corner. I think you can wait for wide receiver in this class for some reason. I really like Austin Watkins Jr. a lot out of UAB. I like his tape. I like his physicality. He had a really good pro day. He ran a 4.4. You know, he's 2.10 or whatever. You know, solid guy, can do everything. So I think you can wait for a guy like that later. Even Powell out of Clemson, you could probably wait for. Amari Rodgers is available. I think they're going to address the wide receiver spot. I think they'll get probably two corners in this draft, an edge guy and an offensive lineman. As long as they get the quarterback, I kind of don't give a shit. As long as the quarterback's correct, right. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I am with you. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, let's get out of here. Croc, always, as always, thank you for everything. Let the folks know where they can find you, find all your work.
Yeah, obviously you guys follow me. Obviously, you guys can follow me on Eric on Twitter at Eric_Crocker. Make sure you guys follow the Crocker Report. That's Croc, yeah, just Crocker Report on Twitter. Obviously you got CrockerReport.com as well. Just started up the YouTube, so I'm about to start getting that going. So make sure you guys subscribe, Croc Talk TV. And I have the Patreon account, patreon.com/CrockTalk. And a lot of the things I'm talking about with these players, I have them broken down. So Eric Stokes, we talked about Asante Samuel. We talked about Tyson Campbell. I have some teach table on Tyson Campbell. We talked about Keith Taylor. I got a breakdown of him. So, you know, a lot of those things you guys should be able to see if you guys subscribe to the Patreon account. And if you are a 49er fan, DM me and I have a tier specifically for you guys that I have to personally open up, which is only $3. So it's a $3 tier, but you get access to everything that I put on there. You get the same access as somebody that pays $10 a month, but I have to unlock it. So if you are somebody and you're interested in seeing these breakdowns and all these things in a bonus podcast that I have, just hit me, DM me. I got you.
Eric is a stand-up man and he will definitely get back to you. Proud, bro. To me, it's a pleasure to know you. You know,
oh man, come on,
bro. You've been nothing but good to me. So, but thank you again for joining us. As always, I'm Javi. That is Fern. Catch me on Twitter at JaviVague_. Catch my guy Fern here at
hey.
And then Fernando's at
DZ0880. Thanks, Croc.
Yeah, for sure, man. Anytime, Javi knows good.